Come on. Okay, there we go. Good evening, everyone. Welcome to Voice to the Voiceless. I'm Bronwyn Franklin, and I am your host. And tonight I have Betsy Smith joining me. She is a seasoned consultant, coach, and a leader. She's also an author. Betsy has helped hundreds of people build on their strength to achieve both short-term and long-term success. Her book is called The Patient Advocacy Handbook, empowering you to boldly navigate the healthcare system. Her motto, and I found this to be very, very powerful, is be ready, be bold, be heard. Hi, Betsy. How are you tonight?
Hey, so nice to see you. I'm great. I'm in Pensacola, Florida. It's a beautiful spring night. It's been a beautiful spring day. Tomorrow it's going to rain like everything, but I'm in Florida, so that's how it goes. But I'm so excited to be here. Thank you, Bronwyn, for inviting me.
I'm excited to have you. So tell us a little bit about how you got started being a patient advocacy.
My husband was diagnosed with bone marrow cancer in 2014, and he died in 2018. And during those 4 years of in and out of many healthcare institutions, I realized that I knew how to advocate, but I didn't think many other people did. So my first, if it's okay if I tell you my first experience, or would you like to do something?
No, go right ahead and share that, please.
Okay. So my husband is diagnosed with bone marrow cancer. But when he went to see the doctor, he didn't feel bad. He was just tired. So go to see the hematologist. He says you got bone marrow cancer. And at that time, my 75-year-old husband was playing tennis 3 times a week with people a third of his age. Mm. So we're in North Carolina. He founds a world-renowned hematologist that he wants to be his doctor. And so we get that started. And because we were in this research hospital, Jack was eligible for a couple of clinical trials. So he starts one of these clinical trials, and it is, you go to this floor and you have your blood drawn and your chemo, and then you go down to another lab and you wait and you spend 8 hours there with them pulling your blood out and put back. So the research nurse says to me, when she says, we need to get him down for this test, it's got to start in 30 minutes, Betsy. So I'll go ahead and take him down, and you can check out.
Okay.
Okay?
Okay.
So she took him down. I checked out, went down to the lobby, and there's my husband in the corner in a wheelchair, asleep.
Wow.
This is minute 31 that he should be here. So I shrieked at the top of my lungs, what's my husband doing here?
Yeah, absolutely.
And of course, a tech came out and said, ma'am, can I help you? Yes, that's my husband. He was supposed to have a procedure started 5 minutes ago. What's going on here?
Right.
And the poor man said to me, we didn't know he was here.
Oh, my goodness.
And I said, well, you know he's here now. Get it started. And Bronwyn, that was the first time I realized I couldn't trust the healthcare system to take care of my husband.
I hear you. I hear you. Yeah. That's hard. That was really, really hard. I can only imagine. In the course of my journey, I've had to. At first, I wasn't as fortunate because I didn't realize that I had a voice. You know, I was raised, and this is probably how many generations were. These are doctors. They went to school for this. They are the experts. They know you just do what they say do.
Yeah. And My parents were of that generation. Mm-hmm. I grew up in the 60s. Mm-hmm. We were not of that generation. Show me. I don't, you know, we were just all in people's faces. Now, these 40 years later, I'm not in people's faces as much as I once was. And I know how to charm them. I'm from Texas, honey. I can charm them. I can threaten them. But when my husband was diagnosed and we got enveloped in that healthcare system, mm-hmm. I just realized that was my new calling, to talk about advocacy, to tell families and friends, ask the hard questions. And if you don't know what they are, ask somebody what they are.
Okay.
So.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. So as you continue this journey with Jack, it sounds like it was just really, really, really hard to get through it. How do you ask those hard questions? How do you find those hard questions? How do you do that?
Well, you know, the first thing I think that it's important is that the family start asking the hard questions. Do you have everything in order? Do you have a living will? Mm-hmm. And that's not being, that's not being unkind. That's being realistic. Because if you don't have everything in order, your kids are going to have to pay for everything.
I understand. I totally get it. I agree.
Yeah. So,
and you're right. Those are hard questions. I remember when I asked my dad, probably about 5 years ago, we were on a trip, and, you know, I asked him, and it was really hard. And we never got an answer, and the things never got done. So when he did pass a couple of years ago, the children had to figure it out. We had to figure it out, because he did not take the steps, even though we were encouraging him to do so. He didn't want to have that conversation.
But you can only do as much as you can do.
Yeah, he didn't want to have that conversation. But I'm a believer like you. I have mine in order.
Yeah, and the earlier the better, because the earlier it's not so intimidating, but the later it is.
Mm-hmm. I agree. So when you and I were talking the other day, and we were talking, you were talking about another time that, you know, you really had to step up and advocate for your husband. What was that? What did that feel like for you to have to be so bold?
Well, Bronwyn, I'm from Texas, so bold is not hard for me.
Okay.
I'm 5'1". I weigh 120 pounds. I'm not very scary. But honey, if I get in your face, I'm pretty scary.
Okay.
And not many things intimidate me. And as we went through this journey with hospitals and doctors, and I realized how many other family and friends were never asking a question. Okay, we'll do that. Okay, we'll do that. So, years later, my husband Jack and I are in a small town in outer Texas, and he got pneumonia. So he went into, first he said, "Betsy, I don't feel very good. I want to go to the emergency room." I said, "Jack, we're in the middle of West Texas. It's midnight. We're not going to the emergency room. I'll take you as soon as the sun comes up," which was fine. So we go into the ER, and Jack reports to the ER doc, "I'm short of breath. I have a pain in my lower right side." So the ER doc puts him on oxygen, puts him on Tylenol IV. That didn't help. Then he ratcheted up to another drug. Jack relaxed. He could breathe. And the doc says, "You can take him home." we are staying with my cousin at this time, outer Texas. So my cousin and I are driving him home, and I said, did that doctor take an x-ray? And she said, no. And I said, Jack was complaining of chest pains, and he didn't put, she said, no.
Yeah.
So that was my first memo to the hospital CEO.
Good for you.
This is what happened. Jack came to my cousin's house that night. Of course, the next morning he was admitted to the hospital.
Okay.
And by that time, he has an endocrinologist. He's got a cardiologist. He's got all of these doctors working on his disease, but not Jack as a person.
Yeah. Wow.
Yeah.
Wow.
So we've been there about 10 days or so. And every morning, 5 o'clock, I'm there with the nurse looking at the charts. And this one morning she said, oh, that can't be right. What? Well, his counts were this much at midnight. They're this much now. That can't happen. Ron, when they had put my husband's name on somebody else's blood vial.
Oh, my goodness.
Oh. And somebody else's name on my husband's blood vial.
And how incompetent. How scary.
Oh, it was horrible. You're talking about shrieking. At least I didn't have to shriek then, because the nurse was running up the hall saying, I don't know what she was saying, but we had all the phlebotomists in. We had the vice president of quality in.
Absolutely.
And I would always say, as the former provost of a health-related campus in Pensacola, Florida, I realize how important this is.
Mm-hmm.
And they assured me it would never happen again. They had found out what happened. Okay. So we went along.
Wow. That's scary.
Oh, it's unconscionable.
Gosh. Yes.
And so we go along. Now we've been here about 20 days. Jack's not doing much better, and there is a medical functional position called a hospitalist.
Okay.
And they are the people who just see people in the hospital. They don't see them in the office, they just see them in the hospital. So we're out in the middle of nowhere, Texas, and our doctor in hospital is in North Carolina. So I keep saying to the hospitalist, I want to get my husband back to North Carolina. So one day, one of those poor, unfortunate souls came in and said, I'll release him to go by ambulance to North Carolina.
Oh, no. Where were you?
It was a 27-hour drive.
Okay, yeah, I was going to say, where were you? What state were you in?
Texas.
Oh, no.
We were way at the end of Texas.
Oh. Oh, my gosh.
And so I said, oh, no. No, no, we are not doing that. Are you kidding me? No, we're not doing that. So a few days later, he comes in and he says, well, I've decided to release him to fly commercially back to North Carolina. And again, I said, you have got to be kidding me. This man has no immune system. He cannot get out of bed, and you're going to release him to fly commercially? No, we are not doing that.
Oh, my goodness.
So by this time, out in the middle of nowhere in Texas, my husband's four adult children are there, one from Canada, okay, one from Wisconsin, one from Virginia, and one from North Carolina, and they've been there a week.
Okay, wow.
I mean, their daddy was sick, so
yeah.
So I called the social worker, Ronald, and I said, I want answers, and I want them in 2 hours. And she said, we're doing the best we can. And I said, that's not good enough. Hung up the phone, looked at his four kids, and said, I'll be back. So off I go to find the hospital CEO. And people say, well, how did you know where to find it? Well, I just kept asking, where's the CEO's office? Where's the CEO's office? So I go into the CEO's office, and his administrative assistant says, hi, how can I help you? And I said, my name is Betsy Smith. And she said, oh, I recognize that name. Because now they've got three memos from Betsy Smith saying, this doctor was not, and this hospital. And I said, I want to talk to Mr. Smith, the CEO. And she said, well, he's in a very important meeting. And I said, what could be more important than the spouse of a man who's been here almost 3 weeks? And she looked at me and she said, well, he's with his lawyers. Yeah. And Texan that I am, I said, he better be. Mm-hmm. And she said, I'll call you when he's, oh, no, that's okay. I'll just sit right here in this lobby and wait for him. Mm-hmm. So his meeting didn't last very long. And he comes out and she whisks him away. And he comes back and he invites me into his office. Smith, how can I help you? And I said, I want my husband back to North Carolina tomorrow. Mm-hmm. And he said, well, he's welcome to stay here as long as he needs to. I said, you are killing him.
Wow.
I want him back in North Carolina tomorrow. And my stepdaughter and I had already done research about air ambulances.
Okay.
And found companies. And the hospital CEO says to me, well, I understand you found out about something company, but I can't afford to send your husband back by jet. And I leaned forward and I looked at him just like I'm looking to you now. And I said, you make very sure it's worth it to you and this hospital not to get my husband back to North Carolina tomorrow.
Mm-hmm.
And he said, is that a threat? And I said, take it however you want to, but you make sure it's worth it to you and this hospital not to get my husband back to North Carolina tomorrow. And I left.
Good for you.
And I got back up to the room and Jack, who is now conscious, and says, tell him we'll have the price, $40,000.
Wow.
Now, I had already looked at I had already moved money. I knew I could do that if I had to. But I wasn't paying to get him back to North Carolina when this hospital was killing him. Mm-hmm. So I get back up to the room, and Jack says, tell him we'll split the cost. Bronwyn, I didn't have to do that. The hospital CEO was up within 30 minutes. He had papers for me to sign. We were on a Learjet the next day, and we were in North Carolina.
See, people, we don't know the rights that we have or the power that we have as individuals or family members to advocate for things like that for so long. And there's still too many people out here that are going with, well, whatever they say, we just kind of settle for that. And that's not okay, because just like Jack, they were. He was wasting away.
He was. And Bronwyn, I know not everybody has my personality. I know they weren't raised in Texas. I know they weren't raised by a German square-jawed woman who thought she was the toughest, 4'11", thought she was the toughest thing in ever. I mean, I get that. I was provost of a medical campus. I used to take hospital CEOs to lunch and ask them for $1 million. But when that was my husband, I didn't remember that.
Okay.
I just knew I had to get him back to North Carolina.
Right.
And, you know, be ready, be bold, be heard.
Yes. Yes.
And
I like that.
You are just as capable of any of those medical professionals. You have different skills.
Yes.
But they're just human beings who put their pants on one leg at a time, just like we do.
Absolutely. Absolutely. So we were just kind of sharing a little bit about using the term advocate and advocacy. And I, as a peer support specialist and a person with a mental health diagnosis, I learned later in my life to advocate. And part of that is being able to, when you go into these systems, when you have a mental health diagnosis, and this is my story. I kept going because I was feeling really, really tired all the time. And I didn't have insurance. I had state insurance. So I was limited to where I could go. And so my psychiatrist just kept increasing my medications. Oh, you're just depressed. You're just depressed. Just depressed. And this went on for a couple of years. And I took a class called Chronic Disease Self-Management. And a part of the training, I was training to be a trainer to do this. And a part of it was to set goals every week. So my goal at the end of the training was to get to see a medical physician and get a physical within 90 days. Well, I did that. I went to the free clinic and the lady looked at me when she got my blood back and she said, "How did you get here today?" I'm looking, "Well, I drove." She said, "How are you feeling?" I'm like, I'm feeling okay. She said, "Looking at your iron level, you should not be standing. Your iron level is so low." But because I didn't have any health insurance, which is I'm so glad we got a little bit of something now. I had not seen a medical doctor. I was only seeing a psychiatrist who kept saying, "Oh, you're just depressed. Here's a prescription. Here, you just..." So eventually, this doctor, long story short, it took a couple of years because she had to go through and find out what was causing me to be anemic as a middle-aged woman, because this wasn't something I had as a kid. And usually it's three things that she told me that happens for it to happen that way. You either have colon cancer, ulcers, or you have some sort of female concerns. So it took a process of elimination of tests after tests after tests. Eventually, I wound up having to have a partial hysterectomy, because I was hemorrhaging every month.
Wow.
You know, every month. I mean, it was just... So that's when I learned that I needed to start speaking up and pushing and being a little bit more bolder when it came to my healthcare.
You don't have to be rude, but you've got to stand up.
Yes. And so then that's when I became... And I started, and I felt like I needed to become an advocate. And that's what I do in the healthcare profession right now. I talk about, hey, let's not forget about this particular set of people, you know, people who have mental health challenges, people who are brown or black, people who are incarcerated. They're still human beings.
They are.
And someone has to speak up. So tell me a little bit about how you feel about, because you use the term patient advocacy, empowering you to tell me something, how you came about that title.
Well, when I've just written a book, The Patient Advocacy Handbook. And when I started writing it, I realized I've been an advocate since the time I was five, because my mother brought my baby sister home and said, "Betsy, this is your baby sister, and your job is to take care of her." And I took that very seriously. Mm-hmm. My darling sister probably didn't learn to speak until she was 7 because she was 5 years younger than me. And every time somebody, when she was 1, would say, "What was your name?" I'd say, "Her name is Molly Smith. Where do you live?" She, "Oh, no, no." Now, let me back up a little bit. My mother had me when she was 33, and it was 1949.
Okay.
That was late to have a baby. She had a tubal ligation, and 5 years later, she's pregnant. Mm. So in this little country town, this little country doctor says to her, "Miss Smith, I think we need to abort this fetus because I think it'll kill you." And my little 4'11", square-jawed German mama said, "You leave me alone and God and I'll have this baby."
Oh, look at her.
Well, she did. And my sister has been romping, stomping, death and destruction since the moment she breathed her first breath. But I think that goes along with the advocacy. My mother advocated for her unborn child. Now, yes, it could have killed both of them. I get that. In 1954.
Yeah. Yeah.
But that's where I got this stand up in your face is from my mother.
Absolutely. That's where it came from.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Yeah. So, and,
mm-hmm. Go ahead.
You know, if during my career, Bronwyn, I've always been a women's mentor. I mean, I was a child of the 60s, so by the time the 70s came, I was all about not so much National Organization of Women, but women's empowerment.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And I was lucky enough to live long enough to still be young enough to relate to young women when I came to Pensacola at Pensacola State College as a dean.
Nice.
Yeah, it was nice.
Great. And how long were you in that position?
I was a dean for about 4 years. Then I was provost of the Open Campus, which was business and industry. Then I was provost of the health-related campus, which is where I got all my training about dealing with hospitals.
Okay.
And then I finished out my career as vice president for institutional advancement, where I supervised the foundation and we raised $3 million. I supervised the public television station and I had a TV show for 5 years.
Okay.
And I supervised marketing.
Wow.
So impressive. I had a wonderful career.
Impressive.
In Pensacola. Yeah.
And as you were journeying through that in Pensacola, what was the one piece at the university or throughout that whole career that you really had to advocate for some change, especially as it relates to empowering women?
The president of that college hired me, and he hired me to stir stuff up. I believe that.
Okay.
And the first thing he said was, "You're going to start a women's leadership program." Okay, can do that. And then a few years later, "You're going to just start a downtown center for the college." Okay. Now let me go do that. So he knew me well enough to keep me challenged at the cutting edge things that were going on in the women's movement. And he trusted me enough not to just shatter things. And that's kind of interesting because I can shatter things. But I've made a difference in women's lives for 40 years.
Over 40.
I still have women who I mentored 20 years ago as Facebook friends.
Nice.
And we keep up. Yeah. Because that's what I do. Advocacy is for my baby sister. Advocacy for women in the workforce. as a leader, as an advocate for my team. And then I was introduced to patient advocacy. And that's, advocacy is my new overall metaphor.
It sounds like that was your purpose in life, was to advocate.
I think it was. Yeah, Bronwyn, I think it was.
And you seem to be doing an amazing job at it. I'm fascinated now because we started talking about the patient advocacy, but then, you know, as being a woman and hearing you talk about some of the things you did, it sounds like it goes back maybe 50 years, because it sounds like it goes back to the 70s. And
yes,
that's
absolutely.
Almost 50
it's just
years.
Hard for me to remember.
No, that's, that, no, that's totally amazing. So in the process of that, and, you know, and the mentoring of women, what is the one story that stands out for you there in supporting and empowering women in this movement? Because we're still struggling.
Yeah, we are. And I hope that we will move from the struggling mindset to the growth mindset.
Mm-hmm.
It's not about us. I realize that. But I had a mentor program, Bronwyn, in North Carolina. I had five professional women. And we were just supposed to meet for 9 months. We met for 3 years. At the end of our mentoring experience, every one of those young professional women had a new job with more pay at either at another company,
yes,
or at their company. And that's, you know, that's my get my husband back to North Carolina.
Right.
Get my girls out there.
Right.
And it was just such fun. It was so affirming. And, you know, one of them was going to apply for a job. So we looked at what she had done. Did she have a grad book? Was this the right time in her company? And she applied for this promotion. And her boss, as they often do, said, well, let me think about it overnight. And she came back the next day and he said, I'll give you the title, but let's wait 6 months to see about the money.
Wow.
And she had another job 3 weeks later because I had coached her, be ready to walk.
Yes.
Because once you ask that, it's never the same. You're either great or it's not great. Mm-hmm. So be ready to walk. And she was. And it was one of my greatest things. Yeah.
Wow. Absolutely. So, yeah, absolutely. Yeah, I get that. I get that. It's like, you're going to give me a title, but not give me the pay to go with the title.
Exactly.
You know,
oh, yeah.
How devaluing and dehumanizing is that? You know, my goodness. Well,
but at least she had us to get her ready.
Yes, absolutely.
You know, think about how many women go to ask for a promotion raise and they're not ready. They don't know. They're late. I've done a good job. I want more money. Or they think, I've done a good job and they'll recognize it and I'll get more money. No, baby. That's not how that works.
Yeah, you're right. You're absolutely right. Good.
Yeah.
Definitely good points. Good points. So as I was looking at, you do a lot of coaching. You do a lot of consulting. Which is awesome. So what kind of, but you just shared one about, you know, having a young lady prepared to walk if it wasn't, what are there some other type of gems, because I don't like to call them tools and skills, I call them gems because they are very precious and very valuable. So
I love that. Yeah.
You know, because, yeah, we use these to help us get through whatever we need to get through in life. And
yeah,
people call them whatever, but I call them gems. Are there any other gems in the patient advocacy that you coach on?
I do. And they're little things that are big things.
Okay.
I always coach people to get to, if the person's in the hospital, get to know the nurses, get to know the aides, develop a relationship with the people who deliver your food, get to know the housekeepers because they know. And when my husband was in one of the research hospitals for a long time, I got to know the valets because I'd come in every morning and I'd leave them. And when my husband died, one of these young African-American men came up to me and he said, what's going on? And I said, my husband died today.
Wow.
And he said, can I say a prayer for you?
Mm-hmm.
Now, you think healthcare isn't loving?
Oh, yeah.
It is. It's a person. Everybody is a person. But this young man just was such a comfort to me.
I'm so glad that you had that, you know, someone that could see you and not just see the job. And they could see that, you know, that something was different in your energy.
Yeah.
You know? That was awesome.
And my whole book, The Patient Advocacy Handbook, Bronwyn's, not a slam against the healthcare system. It is a book that gives families and friends of patients ways to address it, ways to look at it differently, even scripts of words to use.
Okay.
Because they're just like you and me.
Yeah. So what I was just, you know, not to take away from people going to Amazon and getting the book, you know, yeah, absolutely. I was on there today and it's there and it's like, wow. Okay. But what's a couple of good words or again, gems that people can use, to support family. I wish I had this 2 years ago.
One word is relax, understand, and the other word is self-care.
Okay.
Now, when my husband was really, really sick, there was not a lot of self-care for Betsy. I used to go to the gym 3 days a week, but there was not enough Betsy to go to the gym and stay by his side in the hospital.
Yeah.
So self-care is important to me, and I talk about that. But there comes a time if your loved one is, you know, chronically ill and not going to make it, you ain't going to go to the gym. You're going to do what you have to do. I just want people to be cognizant of, I can go back there.
Right.
I remember telling a couple of my friends when Jack was in the hospital for so long, my God, I've never been through a McDonald's drive-in so much in my life as I've been through in the past month. Well, they both got together and got me some fruit and vegetables and brought it over.
Wow, how nice.
And it brings me to, if you are there, if you are absolutely engrossed with care for your loved one, ask your friends. Let them know what you want. Maybe it's pizza. Maybe it's a tossed salad. But if you, as the advocate caregiver, don't ask your friends, they don't know how to help you.
Yes. So,
and they want to.
Yeah.
Everybody wants to help you.
Yeah, and that can be sometimes challenging for some of us who are super strong people.
I
It
know.
it's hard
I'm
to
one of
ask for
you, but
help.
I got humble. I did.
So
I got humble.
that's a key gem, is sometimes it's okay to be humble and ask for what you need, because friends and family are wanting to help you, but they don't know if we don't take that pride and put it to the side and ask. So yeah, that's a great tip. That's an awesome tip.
And what I say to my mentees is, how do you feel when someone asks you for a favor? Well, you feel good. You want to help them. Well, why would you not let them do that for you? Why would you not ask them for that?
Yeah. Wow, good question. Good question. You know, how does that make you feel? Absolutely.
Yeah. That makes
Absolutely.
us feel great.
It does. It does. And it's another tool, a gem that's empowering the person that's asking as well. You know, definitely empowering to them. Yeah. So we have a few more minutes. Is there something else you might want to share? About the book, about oh, let's how are the children doing? You know, how was that? How were they interacting when you were doing all this advocating for their dad? How was that
Thank
for
you for
them?
asking this. They are my stepchildren, and they are all in their 50s because I was a trophy wife. They weren't my children, but we evolved into a family, and they were very appreciative of the care I gave their father. But one of the things his illness did was to bring all of them closer together, because I don't know what he and his ex were for thinking, but they had 4 kids in 5 years. One's in Canada, one's in Wisconsin, one's in Virginia, and one's in North Carolina. Well, when I got involved in this family 22 years ago, those young adults had not seen each other for 10 years because their mom and dad were separating.
Whoa.
So I set about giving a surprise birthday party to their father in Williamsburg. And that was before Jack and I were married, so I didn't have to report my spending to him. But it was wonderful. And it was the beginning of them forming their family after their mother and father divorced. And their mother and father had been married 30 years. I mean, this wasn't just whatever.
Wow. And the so that was the piece that started to bring that bond back.
Yes, absolutely.
That's pretty awesome. That's pretty awesome. You know.
And you know, I know to the second if I called any one of those kids who and I said, I need you now, they would be here. They would be here.
I'm pretty sure they would. It sounds like you developed a great relationship with them, which is pretty awesome. And that helped ease Jack while he
It
was going through, you know, to
did.
know that
Absolutely did.
then yeah, to know that he had the family and the cohesiveness of the family and the backing. I get that, you know. That's pretty amazing. That's pretty amazing.
Well, it is our life. It's what it is. I think it's pretty amazing now when I look back on it. But at the time, we were just living through it. And one of the things I hope families realize that you live through it the best you can. There's no right or wrong. There's no this way to do it. There's Now, I can give you my advice, but everybody's their own individual.
Yeah, absolutely. So I heard you talk about the be ready when you shared the be ready about the young lady and letting her know and be ready to walk if you need to. And I heard you share about, you know, the being bold. So how do you think when you put the be ready and the be bold together, how do you come up with the be heard?
Because first you have to be ready. First you have to decide this is important enough to me to take it on. Mm-hmm. Secondly, you have to be bold enough to say it. Mm-hmm. And third, you have to be ready to be heard. Because so often we aren't heard. And if you're ready, you're bold, and you're heard, then you take action.
Okay.
And I left that out of that, but that really is. Be ready. What's going on? What's going on in the hospital? What's going on with the charts? Be bold. Ask the questions. I don't understand this. What's going on with that? And the third one is be heard. I want to see the doctor. I want my husband back to North Carolina. That's be heard.
Okay. Okay. I like that. And when you feel you aren't being heard, then or you take action. You write those letters to the CEOs.
You
go knock on the CEO's door and sit there in his office.
Yeah, I was trying to sit there. Down this way, right? I'm good. Well, I'm good, but you're not being a little bit.
Absolutely. Or you go and find you a new job if they're not going to pay you what you're at, what you know you're worth. But you. And that's what I think it comes down to is knowing that we are valuable and reminding people that as humans, we have value. We are somebody.
Yeah.
And we have people that love and care about us, you know? So I think that's what I'm hearing. Yeah.
And one of the things I like to coach with women about is, what is your value?
Mm.
Can you name it? What is your value to you? What is your value to your company? What? Because we can think, I have a lot of values, but what are they? And how do they fit in? And I have a shtick to do with that, but yeah.
Wow. So it sounds like another book. Sounds like that.
No.
That's another book.
My next book is Betsy's Rules for Confidence and Courage.
Whoa, I like the sound of that. Oh,
yeah.
Well, you're gonna have to keep me up to date, and the
will.
Listeners.
You know, I will.
When that book comes out, you know.
Yeah.
Because I'm learning so much just sitting here listening to you, and it's really. I'm reflecting on my journey. And the advocacy work that I do now, that sitting on the National Coalition for Mental Health Recovery, and you know some of the work that I do, and the thing is, we kind of came a little bit after Women's History Month because March was Women's History Month, and this would have been perfect, but as a Black woman, sometimes that being heard part for me has been my challenge, but I'm hearing your words and I'm going to take a different approach, you know, because I'm usually bold. I'm outspoken, you know, but now I have to be ready to also take the action if I need to take that action. So any other, let me ask you this. Have you watched, did you watch the confirmation hearings last week with the Honorable, I believe her name is Brown Jackson? Would you, what coaching would you have, or advice or gems you would have shared with her? Because I think she held it together. You have your mic off because of the dogs. You have your mic off. Your mic is still off, Betsy, because I know you turned it off because of the dogs. But they were okay. They were okay. The bark, you're still off. But I think she did it. There you go.
Oh, yeah. Of course, I have my ideas about that and everything else. I would prefer not to put it on.
Okay.
I prefer not to talk about it.
Sounds good. Sounds good. Fair enough. Fair enough.
If I could raise my hand, I would raise my hand for her.
Okay.
But I've been around a long time. I've seen a lot of shit go on with the Supreme Court. So, And, you know, my generation has been, we're going to fix this. We're going to fix this. We're going to fix this. My women's generation. And we're moving towards it.
Yeah, we are. We're getting a little closer, but I think we still have quite a bit of ways to go.
Yeah.
You know, I just think about it. The last few years, we've made some steps forward, but usually when you make so many steps forward, you do have to take a couple of steps back, you know, before you get to get the momentum going. You know, it's almost like a rocking motion, you know.
Yeah, it is. A cha-cha. One step forward, two steps back.
Right. Yeah. It's like a rocking motion. Yeah, then you get the momentum going. So, yeah. Well, we have about 9 minutes. Is there any final thoughts or any pieces that you might want to add or any tidbits about this new book? Because now it's got my interest.
Well, the book literally is our story of in the healthcare system. But I've also interviewed 8 other people about their stories.
Okay.
And One of my favorites is, well, I have a lot of favorites, but a very successful businessman. I'm interviewing him. Mother's in her 80s. She's in the hospital. He's in the room with her. And she says to the nurse, "I'm having a heart attack." And the nurse said, "Oh, no. You just got to ingest." And I said, "You didn't call a charge nurse. You didn't call another nurse. You didn't call a doctor. You didn't call an advocate." He said, "I didn't know."
Right.
"I didn't know."
Right. Wow.
And I guess until you walk through these halls, you don't. But I want to let people know, if your mama's in the hospital and she says she's having a heart attack, you get somebody else to say she is or she isn't. You just don't accept them.
Yes.
And you don't.
Go ahead.
You don't have to be in their face. Now, I'm a pretty in-your-face person, but I have another story from a retired hospice chaplain in my book. And she talks about how she handles that differently. But everybody has a story.
True.
If your audience has an instance they want to talk to me about, or they want to get a VIP morning or whatever, I'm happy to talk to them. I'm not free, but I'm happy to talk to them because this is my business.
Absolutely. What's your website, or how can people get in contact with you?
BetsySmith.com.
Okay. Betsy@BetsySmith.com. And she also has a website, and her website is BetsySmith.com. And this is a beautiful picture of her here.
Thank you.
This is a beautiful picture. And I'm just going to read the quote that's on the screen here. It says, "I'm glad you're here, stepping up to take charge of your future. Helping people, particularly women, break through obstacles and grow with courage and confidence has always been my mission. And I believe it's never been more important than it is today for you." I like that. I like that. That's pretty awesome. And so Betsy does coaching. She does workshops. She speaks. She's also an author of the book, The Patient Advocacy Handbooks. And that is for friends and families who have loved ones who may be going through some challenging healthcare times.
Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. Betsy, you are amazing. I just love you.
I mean, it's just amazing how we got connected, right?
Yeah. That was something. I had a friend that knew I'd been trying to do this podcast. She's like, there's a couple of Facebook groups that does it. And so I went on there and I said, well, I wanted to try it, you know, and I just kind of copied the blurb that I have for my podcast, and Betsy reached out, and I'm like, hey, email me. And we had a beautiful chat the other afternoon. It was really enjoyable. You are such a pleasant, beautiful person. Your energy is amazing. And I am so grateful that you are helping people and family be more empowered to navigate the healthcare system, because it can be a little intimidating because we don't always know the lingo or the jargon or the procedures. So sometimes we have had to just accept what's being told us, but it's okay to ask the questions and ask the hard questions.
Thank you. What are they going to do? Tell you yes or no? And if you don't like the no, chase that down too.
Absolutely. Continue to
They're
go
just
on
human
down.
Beings.
Absolutely. Yeah. Absolutely. We're all human. Yeah. You know, absolutely. Well, I appreciate you coming on, Betsy.
Oh, thank you so much for the invitation. It's been a great conversation. And I suspect we will see each other again.
Absolutely. Absolutely. I am looking forward to that, because I may have to join one of your workshops or something, because I'm learning so many different pieces that's going to help me on my journey of advocacy in the work that I'm doing, you know, and advocating for others. Absolutely.
Well, you're doing good work, Arnold, and I'm glad we met, and I think we will do good things together in the future.
Yes, absolutely, Betsy. We sure will. I'm glad we met as well. And yeah, you got the little doggies over there, and they're nice and quiet now.
They've had their dinner, so their little tummies are full. So they're
What's their names?
Gibbs and Ziba.
Gibbs like G-I-B-B-S.
Gibbs like N-C-I-S Gibbs.
Yeah, G-I-B-B-S.
And Ziba like Gibbs. Z-I-B-A and N-C-I-S.
You're going to hear something really funny. My maiden name is Gibbs.
Oh, that's kind of scary.
Yeah, I'm like, wow. Yeah, that's my maiden name. You know, I was born a Gibbs. Yes.
Yes, but now you have lots of names.
Yes, absolutely. I'm Bronwyn Franklin, and I wear a lot of different hats.
Yeah, okay.
I wear a lot of different hats. So, you know, executive director, board president, you know. Absolutely.
Okay. Well, it's been great visiting with you. Thank you so much for the invitation.
No, thank you. I appreciate you having taken out the time this evening and coming on and joining us at Voice to the Voiceless. We enjoyed having you. And at any time, I'd be glad to have you back. Share some more of those gems, because they are precious.
All right. Thank you so much.
Thank you. Have a good night.
All right. Have a great weekend.
You too. Okay, this is Bronwyn from Voice to the Voiceless, and I'm signing off for tonight. See you again soon. Thank you for joining us.